You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
Reading today comes from a book by Deepak Chopra, The Book of Secrets, and I think it covers the topic pretty well. Why bring the mystery of life into a system that already knows what is real? But as convincing as material world looks, to the great embarrassment of modern science, no one has been able to prove that it is real. Ordinary people don't focus on science, so this glaring problem is not well known. Yet any neurologist will assure you that the brain offers no proof that the outside world really exists, and many hints that it doesn't. All the brain does, in fact, is to receive continuous signals about the body's state of chemical balance, temperature, and oxygen consumption, along with a crackling stream of nerve impulses. This mass of raw data starts out as chemical bursts with attached electrical charges. These blips run up and down a tangled web of spidery nerve cells, and once a signal reaches the brain, like a runner from the edge of the empire bringing a message to Rome, the cortex assembles raw data into even more complex arrangements of electrical and chemical blips. The cortex doesn't inform us about this never-ending data processing, which is all that is happening inside grey matter. Instead, the cortex tells us about the world. It allows us to perceive sights, sounds, tastes, smells, and textures, the whole array of creation. The brain has pulled an enormous trick on us, a remarkable sleight of hand, because there is no direct connection between the body's raw data and our subjective sense of an outside world. So the topic this morning is seeing is believing, or is it? Or how are believing and seeing connected? And I guess perception is a part of that whole process. Often at the end of movies and books you have disclaimers, and so here's the disclaimer at the beginning this morning. I was raised as a Baptist, and when I stand up to give an address, I sometimes fear that I'm being a bit preachy, so bear with me if I am. I'm not going to ask anybody to come down to the front. I'll pray over you or raise hands or any of that. But if it starts bordering on that, please bear with me. Have you ever heard someone say, "I won't believe it until I see it," or perhaps the old adage, "seeing is believing"? I wonder how much trust we place in what we see as being true or real. I'm a great observer of people, and I guess at times that could be construed as voyeurism. For example, sitting having a cup of coffee or waiting in an airport, I watch the humanity around me, observing similarities, differences, and what I sometimes interpret as oddities. And then I construct stories in my mind relating to what I see. In an airport, I might see someone coping with small children and luggage by themselves, and then develop a story in my brain about them flying to meet up with their partner who is working overseas, or perhaps the children's grandparents who live overseas, and wonder where the partner is. My imagination can run wild at this point and can entertain me for some time, which is a good thing when you're stuck in an airport, isn't it? Maybe I'm a little weird, maybe I'm not. I know that the way I interpret my immediate environment tells more about me than the reality of what I'm viewing. In interpreting what is happening around me, I am actually bringing my accumulated knowledge of the past into my viewing experiences. I wonder if I have any other fellow travellers here who share that habit of mine. Is there anybody among us? Great. I'm not alone. Whenever we see, view, or observe something, a complex process takes place, and we do it without consciously thinking about it. It is often taken for granted until it is diminished or reduced or in some way or something threatens the loss of it. Let's see how good our powers of observation are. I wonder if anyone is brave enough to describe what Daphne or Jenny, OP, who were in the foyer this morning when you came in, are wearing today. So there's greeters wearing. Anybody, you can turn around and have a look, I guess, now. But, oh, Janet, you're at the back, you might be out of view. Janet. Well done. What's she got on her feet? Are you sure? Somebody else, Sue, did you have your hand up? No. Brendan. So do most people. Anne. Has she? No, it's a black coat. Okay, that was a bit hard. Sometimes it's easy, sometimes it's difficult. I'm always amazed when people are able to describe a scene of the crime and are able to tell what colour somebody was wearing or what clothing they had on. I think that's very amazing to me because I don't think I'd be able to do it. Sometimes I can't remember what Helen's got on when she's left the house. So I think if something happened when she was out, don't come to me and ask. When the mechanics of sight is considered, the complexity of how we make sense of our environment is astounding, but not readily apparent because it's such an automatic process and we take it for granted. Perhaps the development of the camera is partly to blame for this. We're all aware of the structure of the simple camera, with lenses, mirrors, and a recording medium. And if we use this knowledge as a basis for understanding the process of our sight, it can seem a relatively simple process. On that diagram up there, you can see the pupil, which is the aperture of the camera. It's the light coming in. You can see the retina at the back where the image is placed, and then the optic nerve that takes that to the brain. So we can think it's a fairly simple process. The iris is actually the thing that controls the aperture opening of that process. But the retina isn't just a screen like we have here. It consists of a myriad of nerve cells that receive the light energy from a subject, and then they're encoded into electrical impulses that are then transmitted to the brain via collections of nerves, where the electrical impulses are decoded into visual meaning, what we recognise as sight. This is an incredible and delicate process that happens unceasingly during our waking moments. Added to this physical process is a psychological process called perception that not only affects how we see our environment, but also how we interpret what we see. To illustrate how perception affects our vision, let's have a look at some images that I had used when working with some clients in another life before retirement. I use this technique as part of counselling my clients. Not all of them, but those who need it. You may have heard of cognitive behaviour therapy, where a client is assisted to find and practice effective strategies to address the identified goals and decrease symptoms of thought distortions and behaviours that are not helpful to that client. Because we had some difficulty in interpreting those images then, do you think we need to question the validity of things we are looking at and interpreting? Can we just accept it at face value? In some religious philosophies, this is the starting point of their spiritual development or path. They attempt to move the viewer away from the preconceived ideas of what they are viewing as a means of reaching a higher spiritual plane. Of course, scientists have been involved in attempting to unlock some of the mysteries of sight. A branch of science known as biocentrism, developed from quantum physics, has involved studying the link between sight and consciousness, and is also discovering the importance of the link between the viewer and the environment. One of the analogies used by scientists involved in this work is that of a rainbow. The bending and refraction of light through water particles is well recognized as the basic cause of this phenomena. However, these scientists point out that the existence of the rainbow essentially requires three components: the sun, raindrops, and there must be the conscious or its surrogate film viewer there at the same time. Without a viewer, the rainbow doesn't exist. These scientists propose that we are not simply observers of our environment or our universe, but are participants in the existence of all that we see. Two of these scientists, Robert Lanzer and Bob Berman, discuss this work in their book Biocentrism. They discuss how scientists working in this field have determined that, and I'm quoting this, what we perceive as reality is a process that involves our consciousness. That is, our perception is directly linked to our conscious thinking. A fantastic proposition or reality. However, just for a moment, consider some of those unexplainable incidences that we most probably all have experienced at some time, such as the situation that you may have experienced when somebody is looking at you without you knowing, and yet you feel that they're looking at you and you turn and see. Like, unexplainable in a way. If our participation is a vital part of all that we are viewing and our interpretation of what we are seeing is affected by preconditioning, is it possible for us to continue viewing our world with confidence that what we think we are witnessing can be completely trusted, is believable, a 100% accurate interpretation of the environment in which we live, the people that surround us? Well, obviously, we can't possibly query every visual image that our brain interprets. If we did, we'd be stuck. We would have an energy block. Rob talked about last month in his service on the leaf. If the energy flow is blocked in that leaf, the leaf doesn't grow. If the energy flow is blocked in us, if we're stuck where we were in the past, we're not going to move forward. However, when it comes to viewing those incidents that have a strong influence on our interpretation and opinions or making judgments, there is a need for caution and consideration before our observations are set in concrete or become solid flat fact. There is a need to use spiritual perception in the process of interpretation. Using love for our community, our fellow travellers, on our blue boat home, and our environment is a time-proven way of tempering the thought that all I see, I can believe. Changing our perception by basing it on love, offers the chance of removing blocks to the energy that will aid our spiritual growth and development. The benediction this morning, I'd actually like us all to read this aloud. It's a blessing for ourselves. I don't think we bless ourselves enough, and I think that it's something we ought to make a practice of. So, here are the words. As we have been blessed, so we bless one another to be a blessing. Breathe in, breathe out. This breath we share with all that breathes. Feel the love of the universe flowing through this community, into you and out into the universe again. Let the love of all the universe, your love, flow outward to its height, its depth, its broad extent. You are more than you know, and are more beloved than you know. Take up what power is yours to create safe haven, to make of it a heaven. Give hope to those you encounter, that they may know safety from inner and outer harm. Be happy and at peace, healthy and strong, caring and joyful. Be the blessing you are ordered. This is enough. Blessed be. Amen. Thank you.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianessay@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching Essay Unitarians.